You just finished redoing the. You're done now. You finished redoing the roof on your house.
Yep. Put a whole new rip the old one off. Put a new one on.
Can I ask you something?
Ask me something.
Do you get a sunburn when you're up there doing that?
No.
Does that happen to you?
No. I actually. This is one of those things where I see this conversation comes up probably 2-3 times a year. Because of my heritage, my skin does not sunburn. I've never had a sunburn. I don't know what it feels like.
I am so jealous.
Literally, yeah. In your entire life, you've never been anywhere.
Never had a sunburn.
If I spend more than like 30 minutes outside, I get a sunburn.
You legitimately have a superpower, dude.
Well, I think I have everything that any other person from a descendant from Asia probably has, and they don't. I just don't burn.
Jeez, you're telling me there's a race of these supermen and women?
It was one of those things where I like doing things myself. I like knowing how things work. Like if I'm going to mount a door, right? I want to see how the door is mounted the first time, but then if I got to do like 12 other doors in the house, then somebody else can do the other 11. I just want to know how to do the one so I know how to do it. And if every once in a while I have to mount a door, that's fine. And so with shingles, like, you know, taking them off was fine. It was actually a lot of hard work. But like when you go to put the first row, I get the first couple rows done and I'm like, well, I'm done. I'm kind of tired of doing this now. Now I know how it's done. Now I know how it works. If I ever need to put a row of shingles on, I know how to do it. And then, the rest of the 3 days, I didn't really want to continue.
It's funny you say that because when you told me that, my first thought was this happened to me a lot through my 20s. Every about 3 to 4 weeks, during the summer, I was working a lot, I'd all of a sudden get this urge, like, I gotta get outside. Yeah. I gotta go outside, get some sun. I should do some work in the yard. I should go get dirty. And so I'd, start chatting with my dad, see what kind of projects he was working on around his house. Yeah. And I'd head over to dad. I'm gonna go spend a Saturday with dad. I'll head over to his house and we'll work on a project.
Sure.
And about 3 hours into it, I'm like, well, I'm good.
myself into?
Yeah, and of course, it ends up being an all-night thing that spills into the next day, and often I had to find myself coming up with an awkward exit and kind of not feeling like I wasn't living up to my commitments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I've learned I do want to go outside, but I don't necessarily want to do those specific things, and so I've learned from myself and my mistakes a little bit there. That was a user error that actually led to me figuring out that, okay, that's not really my thing. That's somebody that I'll hire a contractor for. So when you said you were working on your own roof, I was like, damn, that's so amazing. That's incredible.
Noah is an inspiration.
Yeah.
Well, I could never do that. I evaluate things in terms of what it's worth to me, right? So, for example, when my pipe breaks in the middle of the night and it's 3 a.m. and the water, that happened, right? The water heater broke, the pipe broke, right? It's not that I don't know how to weld a pipe, or it's not that I don't know how to put PVC. I know how to do that stuff, but it wasn't worth the $110 that the heating and air company wanted to come out, and then I can just stay at home and in my bed or wherever, and then they come in, open the door, they go down there, they fix it, they put everything in, then they leave, and then they send me a bill. To me, that was not $100. It wasn't worth getting out of bed and going to the hardware store the next day and getting the parts and do it. That whole process wasn't worth $100 to me, particularly because that was a busy week and our billing rate, if it takes me more than 45 minutes to do all this, I would have been financially better off paying somebody else to do it and going do what I do best. So I evaluate things in terms of what they're worth to me. And so when I went to do this roofing project, I looked at it and said, is it worth, whatever the bid was, $10,000, $15,000, whatever. Is it worth that to me to pay somebody to do this? And I thought, no, it's not worth because I talked to a buddy of mine. He says, no, we could probably knock that out in a weekend. No, it's not worth $10,000 or $11,000 or whatever it was, $1,000 to not have 2 days of my time. I'd rather put 2 days in and save that money.
Yeah.
So that's what I opted to do. And so, it didn't cost me, barely anything.
And you learned a new skill.
And I learned a new skill. And it was, it's anytime you do something the first time, it's a lot of fun. Like the second time you go through, it's not going to be so much fun. Of course, when I do things, I don't like my biggest thing, and I think you and I share this in common, I hate doing things twice. I value my time lot more than I value a couple dollars.
That's what scripts are for, and automating things or delegating.
So, yeah, and so when I went to buy shingles, they're saying, well, you can get these shingles for this and these shingles. I'm like, listen, I want the shingles that I got to put on one time, and I don't have to touch them for the longest amount of time. They're like, well, these are the 30-year ones, and they're the blah, 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 but they're a little, I'm like, I don't care. Those are the ones I want. So supposedly, I'll be in my 70s before I ever have to do this again.
Oh, that'll be nice.
And then you'll have to pay someone because you'll be 70.
And I expect that Rika and I will have you convinced to move out to the Pacific Northwest long before then.
Yeah.
Well, so then I won't have to worry about it.
It'll be just a nice resale
value. You'll just have to do it again here.
joking about you moving out here. Mm-hmm. But if we were to take that concept and run for a moment, mm-hmm. This is a nice segue to jump into something Rikai wanted to talk about, which is working with people remotely.
Yeah. Right. I recently have been working with a potential editor. I just was wondering if you guys had any like tips on how to work with someone remotely successfully.
Yeah, but that's hard too when you're trying to do a creative thing.
Yeah.
Because that's a lot of, that's a hard thing to communicate.
A lot of back and forth too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No, you do a lot of this, would imagine, with people that are working for you. I know you do a lot of for your clients too, but in the context of people working for you, do you have thoughts on this?
Yeah. So the key that I found is heavy communication. In any, really in any working relationship, the number one thing that seems to break down is communication. Somebody thinks that they were being asked to do something else, and somebody thinks that they were actually providing something else or doing something some way else. And when you look at studies have shown that the number one factor for causing people to leave an organization, it's not pay. It's not treatment at the workplace. It's not even the job that they're doing. The number one thing that drives people out the door is they don't see progress. They don't see that they're making a change, that they're making a difference. And so clearly communicating to other people, this is our goals. These are what we're trying to do. These are the things that we're trying to achieve. Getting people on board and having them understand what the goals are from day one, that's really, really helpful. And then the other thing I do is we never hire anyone cold. We've never gotten to a point where we've gone to somebody and said, you know, we'll just give you a job. Typically what we do is we have people that we bring on and they work in a temporary capacity for the first 60 days. And if after that time we like them, then we offer them a full-time position.
That's a clever and safe way to protect the business and have a real nice, easy spot in the relationship to say, well, this is the built-in spot where we get to reevaluate things, and it doesn't make it awkward to have a graceful exit there. So that's really nice if you want to sort of hedge your bets there like that. I think particularly when you're trying to communicate with somebody in a creative capacity, which is what I do a lot here at JB, I mean, you know, Rika, you know how much we work remotely with people. It's basically all we do. And there is such a huge difference when people come out. It is like an entirely different team when everyone's here versus when we're all working remotely.
It just feels so much more dynamic and productive.
So much more productive. And people's individual strengths stand out more. And also their nuances, I guess you could say. In your case, though, I would try to communicate via example as much as possible. So I would do very short example edits and example notes of an edit. And I would give them examples of what you expect, so that way they could sort of look at that and emulate it potentially. So, you know, one of the things when you came on and I don't know how valuable this was, but one thing that was sort of a point of reference is we kept all of the old edit projects in there so you could see how I had edited them and where the music went in, which helped sort of make the transition from when I stopped doing it and you started doing it. It was fairly seamless.
Yeah.
Because you were able to look by example. Now, you're not exactly in that position, but you might be able to create some of that.
What about the more more technical side of things? Like, do you have a good way to share files with people that's not Dropbox?
I think we're going to talk about LibreVault later in the episode, so I'll save my thoughts on that. Slack is cheap and easy, and so are other. There's also the Rocket Chat and those things that you can spin up that are useful for sure. This is an example where those, especially for media creation, where those tools are very useful. Dropbox is particularly nice for shared assets. So music files and, you know, the things that you actually end up dropping in the editor. When we had Ham editing Women's Tech Radio, he and I shared a Dropbox folder and I would find some of the music for the show and he could just drop it right in there. And it's pretty seamless that way.
Yeah.
So the file syncing is pretty key to the whole thing. So that's probably a good reason why we should talk about LibreVault here in a minute. But what your version of Dropbox is, the free version isn't enough and the pro version is just ridiculous expensive?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Currently, I'm using an FTP, but it's less ideal because the files aren't just
on
synced
the system
to the person.
Yeah. If they're on the file system, they can be just placed right in the editor.
Yeah, and they get notifications so they know when it's there and they mm-hmm. can just do it.
Mm-hmm. And it's a nice way to share all random things, like fonts are an example of things you'll want to be able to share with this person, so that way the things you're working on match up with the things he's working on. And when it's an upload in a Slack thread, that's or a Telegram thread, that's not as convenient because sometimes you have to scroll back 3 weeks to find that font. When it's on the file system, you just go in the fonts directory and it's right there.
Yep. Okay, so I know you guys have been talking about LibreVault, so I decided to check it out as, you know, an alternative to Dropbox. And no section of the app, as far as I can tell, works in any capacity. So I uploaded some files. First problem I had was that the app did not recognize that I'd uploaded any files. It didn't update the count or anything until I restarted the app. And then once I restarted the app, it never synced the files. So LibreVault's basically an app that does nothing for me. And I also tried loading it on the Mac to see if it was any different. And turns out I can't even load it on the Mac because it says it's a corrupt file.
So not so cross-platform either.
Nope.
See, the grand hope for LibreVault is that it's the best of sync thing and the best of BitTorrent sync. That's the grand hope. And the developer is, you know, seems to be pretty passionate about sticking it to both those projects. And I like his chutzpah in that.
Yeah. And
I believe Wimpy's had some better success, though.
Well, that's good for him. I can't get it working on any platform I try it on. I haven't tried it on Linux.
Hmm. God, I'm on the precipice of switching the Unfilter show over to us. So I'm hoping this testing. Jeez, Rikai, this really throws a wrench in my
well,
plans. If
I will say that the developer has responded to my bugs, and I have to get some bug reports for him, so they might be fixed soon. But so far, it just doesn't work. You might want to hold off on that just a little bit,
or use Linux.
Get in while it's still. Hit patreon.com/today. There'll be big changes coming over there, so you can get in now and say, I supported them when it was still at patreon.com/today. That's a hint of things to come.
Patreon hipster.
That's right. A supporter hipster, if you will. And we have 702 people over there right now. Just the best people in the entire universe. 702, I found them. Turns out, patreon.com/today. And if you go over there and join up, not only will you get access to the wallpaper we use in the video version of the show, that's a little thank you we're doing for our patrons, which is nice because people enjoy it. People are tossing on their background. I like to think that when they look at their background too, they think about user error, which is nice because we're thinking about you, thinking about us. That's super meta. But you also get access to the entire Patreon feed. There's lots of good stuff over there, including live stream postings of many of our shows that we do, the whole live stream. Like, ridiculously to the point of it's almost criminal. A lot of times, especially with Linux Action Show, there's an entire separate episode in just the live stream that most nobody in percentage-wise ever gets to see, but our patrons get to see it, or the people get to watch live. Patreon.com/today. You go sign up. You become a patron. And for a limited time, the swag levels open back up. So if you want to get in at the swag level, we're going to be we cap it at a certain amount so that way we don't get, you know, inundated with swag stuff. And so there's a few slots open where you can jump in and get your swag. Patreon.com/today. And thanks to everybody who's jumped on there to support us as a thank you for doing user error. I don't know if it's sustainable. We'll see how the trends go. Our goal is to try to keep it sponsor free. And I think we'll probably have a feel for that by episode 10 of user error. And if you'd like to vote to keep this show sponsor-free, support us, patreon.com/today. Before we get into Rikai's new build and what he might end up doing with Linux on there, like some sort of bearded mad scientist, I thought it'd probably be appropriate to just take a moment in this show, since we just talked about Patreon, and talk about why we ended Tech Talk today at JB. Because it's sort of this show's fault. So I kind of want to just mention it briefly, because it also, I think, it's a good lens to look at when you bring a project to an end, how you end it, and what the reasons are. And I'll go into some of my motivations for finally wrapping up the show, at least for a while. I kind of like the idea of actually rolling the show out from time to time for, like, special events and stuff. Nothing says we couldn't do that still. So, and it's not like
our limited runs.
Yeah. So it's not like the show's totally ended, but I wanted to talk about it a little bit. And I don't know, Noah, did you know before today that we had ended Tech Talk? Because it happened just a couple days ago.
I mean, I saw when I got the Patreon email saying that it was the last episode. But I had no, I found out about it with everyone else. I had no special JB Insight, communication. I was like, when everyone else found out that it was the last episode, I was like, it's the last episode.
Not what are you,
well, I mean, I think my first reaction was anytime a show goes off the air, it's kind of sad, right? Because it's, you know, especially in Tech Talk was an interesting show because I think I was I was one of the guest hosts, either the first or second episode, like right away at the beginning. I was there from the start of it, and I was one of the first people to sign up for the Patreon when you rolled it out, and I was one of the first people to sign up for the whatever swag level thing. So I've gotten all of the swag throughout. So I've kind of followed that train from the beginning. So when it came, that was my first reaction was, I was like, oh, that's kind of disappointing. And then my second thing was, well, why didn't he tell me about that little goof didn't tell me he's in one of his shows. I wonder why he did that. And then when I asked you today, you're like, oh, it's part of the topics today. So Chris, yeah. Why did you end Tech Talks today?
You know, it's always a decision, I'll just say briefly, that I take very seriously, because I always think about, what if this was like one of my favorite shows and it was coming to an end, how would I feel? So I try to look at it, even if it's not one of our most popular shows. So I have been feeling like the show wasn't living up to the potential that I'd had in mind for it for quite a while now, probably since episode 200 or so. It just was, but that is generally just a, all right, I'll note that and I'm going to try to do better. I'll note that and I'll try to do better. But then I go for a long time like that, 60 weeks, and I go, okay, why am I not landing this to be the quality that I want it to be? And then I start analyzing, well, what's causing this failure? And of course, first I'm very hard on myself, like, you know, what's my problem? Do I not have enough energy to do this show? Why can't I not get this together? But the reality is that I just have a very compact schedule, and I was ending Coda Radio. And then as I was finishing the docs for Coda Radio, I was already also prepping Tech Talk. And sometimes it would mean I would forget to finish the Coda Radio docs, so Rikai had to hold on publishing Coda Radio while I was working on Tech Talk. And so the time crunch meant that I couldn't really spend the time I wanted reading the stories and picking the stories, because I didn't want to do just crap tech news stories. So I was being particular about the stories I wanted to include. So I didn't feel like the quality was right where I was at. And when I start getting to that point in a project, I either decide it needs major fixes, which is a possibility, or I need to consider something else. And when we launched User Air, it was sort of a leap of faith, because I didn't really know where it fit in on the schedule. We still haven't quite nailed it down. But I thought to myself, well, if it's a strong product when it launches, it will carve itself out a spot in the network. That's what happens, is when we launch new shows and they're strong, the network adapts to accommodate that new show. Something gives, something gets eliminated, somebody gets added. There is an adaptation that happens to accommodate something that's a success. And then it becomes much harder to decide when it's no longer a success. And what the clear metric I had is, I don't actually know the download numbers for Tech Talk. I didn't really monitor them very closely because it was a Patreon show. But the RSS subscriptions for User Air have already exceeded Tech Talk Today, which has been around for 260 weeks.
Yeah.
And so the trend on User Air is much stronger. And my enthusiasm to do this show is much higher. I think all of ours is.
And I
realized that what I should do is, I should focus on the things that I enjoy doing more, that seem to have a good amount of momentum behind me. And I have to be very honest with myself when I've reached a limit. And the only way I can accommodate a new project is by eliminating an old project. And so I had to make a decision that I thought, what would the – because it's a Patreon show. What would the Patreons would want me to make a decision that I think is in the whole better for the entire network, better for all of the projects that we have on our plate. Because there are times where, you know, it is a natural spot for a show to end, because that time, that energy, those people could do something else new that is probably better overall. It's a more refined, because every time anyone here at the team does another take on something, we generally bring everything we've learned in the next iterations even better.
Yep.
Not always, and sometimes they fade away. But so that was sort of the full background of the decision to end the show. And it's a tough decision to make. But I'll tell you, after the show wrapped up, that episode 260, when the mics went off, I sit down and I'm like, yep, that felt like I was done. I'm done with that. That feels good to be done with doing that on a ongoing, reoccurring basis. And I will toy in the future with, hey, there's a big tech event like Google I/O is coming up. Let's live stream the first couple hours of Google I/O. We'll make a special Tech Talk Today edition of it or something. I could definitely see that.
Yeah, and it's also better to end a show while you still like it, rather than keep going and grow to resent it.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the nice comments when I got is, I'm going to really miss the show, but just, you know, I always felt like every show was good. You never had a stinker in the whole run, and so you ended on a high note. And I thought, okay, that's nice. That was a good time to wrap it up. So that was the logic behind ending a project And it's always kind of tough because, like, I canceled one show just so I can continue to tread water. It's simply, I get to a point where I've got so much going on that I can't think about how to break things down into individual projects that I can hand off, because it's all just so smashed together.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then I'm able to step out and go, well, I could handle this. I could take this whole bundle and hand it to somebody and they could just figure the whole thing out. But I can't see it as those things. Tuesday, as I'm recording, as I'm still in the last segment of Linux Unplugged, I get a glimpse telegram from Chase saying he's on his way to do Unfilter. I haven't sorted any of my clips yet. I haven't made an intro. I haven't even done the PNG wireframe that goes in Wirecast. Like, I've done none of my work. The only thing is I've sorted them into categories. Actually, producer Matt did that for me. But I haven't gone through them. I haven't watched them yet because I wanted to be able to take Wednesday off. And so I was planning to have about 3:30 to 5 o'clock to do that. And here it is at 3:10. I get a message from Chase. He's on his way. Mm-hmm. And so
of course, once he's there, you won't be able to do it.
Yeah. So as I'm wrapping up LUP and I'm finishing, I'm like, bye, Wes, I really got to hustle. He's like, hey, is there anything I can do to help? And like, I stand there just like for like a good 20 seconds, and I'm like, I know there's something
probably, but I don't know right now.
I can't think of it though. and then what it was is he could have finished the talk. Yeah. I didn't get to it till after Unfilter, so LUP had to sit there and wait. And so that was when I realized, geez, I am way too busy. I am way overdoing this. And I can't even think out what it is I need people to do for me. That was such an obvious one that should have been right at the front of my head. I'm not done with this show until the doc's done, but because everything is so smashed together and I have so much going on, I don't know.
To run together?
I just can't. Yeah, I can't pick it out. And so I keep trying to think about how I can press the brakes a little more without making the content suffer, but so that way I can get a high enough perspective that I can fix these things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's truly why I wrapped up Tech Talk today.
Just give yourself some more breathing room. That makes sense.
To tread water, really. Yeah. I haven't actually got the breathing room I need yet.
Yeah, you gotta spread the load across more hosts. But you need more Patreon to get more hosts.
That's really what it is. I need to give up a couple of shows, and I need to spend more time on the business. I need to spend more time on taking care of things like that, and I need to spend more time on all kinds of things that have been backed up for years now.
But the hard part is you need to give up the shows without taking the shows off the air.
Well, I don't have it. I personally have no problem handing over a show if somebody's competent. It's really a matter of
finding the people.
Yeah, exactly. And that is a huge, huge job because you need somebody who can speak with authority on these topics that we cover, which are more advanced topics than most tech podcasts cover. And you need somebody the audience can trust, and you need somebody that's available, and ideally somebody who's local, or somebody that has the entire skill set like Noah has, where they could do a whole bunch of stuff in their own remote studio, which is how common is that?
Now I'm starting to see why you brought me on user error, Chris. You're training me without telling me.
Your guy's taking over. Well, legitimately, the only good way to get somebody, if they haven't had airtime, is you do have to get them on the air, and they just have to do it. You have to learn by doing a lot.
Yeah.
Or you have to find somebody who's established, who's willing to join you. And most of those people are down in California or something. They're not up here in Arlington, so that's difficult. So this is a big problem to solve, but really that is what I need to do, is I need to be doing less shows because I need more time.
So this is brainstorming. This isn't fully formed thought. This is spitballing right off of what you're saying. But one of the things that I'm trying to solve is, like I said, I'm trying to reach out to other industries. And one of the ways I want to do that, I was reading a book about a guy who, the way that he does a nationally syndicated radio show. The way that he got his start was he was volunteering at a radio station, and they said, why don't you talk about this book that you're writing? And so then he talked about this book that he's writing, and then a bunch of people bought the book because they heard about it on the radio, and then it, blew up into this big thing. So I started thinking about it. I thought, I actually volunteer at an LPFM station here in Grand Forks. I wonder if there's a way I could use that to start promoting UltraSpeed and see if I could get into other industries. And I've been tossing around the idea of trying to figure out a way, because that whole station is dedicated to an entirely different thing that's totally unrelated to tech. And so I was trying to think of a way that I could come up with something and at first I thought, well, maybe I'll do an advertisement. And then I thought, well, maybe I'll do like a 15 or 20 minute thing where just in between these two shows, I would take calls and answer people's technical questions.
Noah's tech help.
Something like that. But now listening to what you're saying, now I'm wondering, if there isn't a way I could knock all three of these birds out with one stone, is there some way that I could, is there some way or some show or some idea or some concoction of all this stuff together that, that could take stress there, that could alleviate some of the burden on you, and I can fill
in. Explain yourself. Are you saying you want to take, do one of the shows?
Do a show. Yeah. But I don't know if it's do one of the shows or do
a
spin off of a show or do a totally new show. I don't know what that, I don't know what that is. I don't know if I, yeah, and I haven't thought that far into it, but
that's just an idea.
Well, I'm just letting you know that that's something
you are uniquely situated because you have a studio, you have the production means, and of course the history of working with us. So yeah, but the thing is about that, Noah, is yeah, that actually would be great. Really, I mean, what I really want is I want somebody that's here in the studio,
yeah.
And I call in one day and say, hey, I'm stuck up here, and they do it. But
yeah,
that's. But what you're talking about isn't, it's more than a baby step though towards that direction. It's I don't know what's between a baby step and a leap.
It's
a good jump. It's a good jump in that direction.
Well, you could even look at it as an interim way to fill in something until you come up with a more permanent solution, or use it to build up enough funding so that you can provide a permanent solution, hire somebody that is a fill-in, Chris.
Yeah.
Something like that. Anyway, I was one of those things I was just thinking about at the end of last week, and I was like, I wonder if there's a way I could get that together. And then now listening to you talk, maybe there's a way. Because the problem is, obviously, is if I'm taking calls, I need people that want to ask technical questions. And the people that listen to that radio station are not going to be those people, right?
I have always wanted to do a call-in show, mm-hmm. haven't I? Haven't I always wanted? Yeah. I've always wanted to do, and we've experimented with it.
We could transition love to a call-in style show.
That is an interesting idea. And people have responded to Noah really well on Unplugged.
Yeah.
And I've said this, I feel to the point ad nauseum, I will do whatever it takes to further the network's interest. So you figure out whatever that is or decide whatever that is and just let me know, and Noah's on board 100%.
You know, I'll tell you, the hard part about doing any of these shows is not the doing of the show. And it is the prep for
Amen.
It. A call-in show, if you actually were able to get calls, would be better. But we'd have to think of a way to cultivate those calls coming in, because otherwise you're sitting there spinning your wheels.
Nah, there'd be people that would call in. Here's the thing: if all we did was tell people, instead of writing in with questions. In fact, I don't know if you saw this. I was talking to Angela about this, and I said one of the problems I have with Lass is I go to do feedback and probably 50% of the feedback that comes in for Lass.
You got questions
are
for
questions.
Him.
Exactly. And so I spend my time answering them, their questions rather than actually putting feedback. And I said, so can you make a separate thing that just says ask no one? I'm just going to, which I totally forgot about, so I didn't have mentioned it. But if you're going to ask questions, ask there. But instead of doing that, you say, save your questions and call in at this particular time and we'll answer them live on the air. I think you'd have more than enough to cover an hour a week worth of, because there's so many questions I can't even answer them all.
I want to do this.
And not only that, you could include the Mumble Room to have more knowledge.
I'm kind of pumped about this. This sounds, you know what would be a, shoot, you know what's almost a perfect solution? We should maybe do it. I know it's really soon, but we should try something like this. We have time to promote it on Lass, and if people listen to this show, we should try to do it maybe this coming Tuesday while Wes and I are at the thing. Wes and I go down there with the Zoom recorder, and we can get our stuff. You guys do that version of the show this Tuesday, and we do the show at the regular time, so all the regular Mumble people can be there
with no hosting and a call in. Yeah,
yeah. And if we give people enough heads up to call in, it might work. It might.
What would we call? What would you call it? So you'd this be something separate from Linux Unplugged?
Do it Unplugged, and we'll just call it. You could call it like the title of the episode "Ask Noah" or something. Gotcha. It could be like a
how it goes for one episode.
If we give people a heads up, say in the pick segment of the Linux Action Show, and people listening to this show tuned in, and people like it, it might be a direction we could go in. And next Tuesday is sort of a problem we're trying to solve.
You know, we can pad that a little bit too. I mean, if you're using it as a thing to gauge, then we wouldn't want to do this. But if you're just trying to get an episode out of it, we can pad that a little bit, because there are so many questions. I can go back to some of those people and just email and say, hey, I will answer your question, but just do me a favor, call in at this particular time and I'll answer it. I can do that. But that's not the danger in doing that is it is a false representation of how many people would ordinarily show up at a time and call in, right? This is something I'm specifically calling people out to go ask them to do it.
I feel like we would would need two tests. We'd need one test to see if the format would work, which would be next week. And then we'd need another test to see if there's enough engagement to keep that going later.
Let me ask you this, Noah. How much work would it be for there to be to people to call the last phone number and leave your question as a voicemail that you could play on the show? How much work would that be?
That wouldn't be very much work. That's already there. But the thing is that the radio station, which is literally 15 feet away from me, is already set up to take calls. So I've got a dump button. And I mean, it doesn't matter.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying if you needed to, that would be a way to pad it, too, with the voicemails.
Yeah, I mean, the other way, if you listen to a lot of call-in shows, what they do is they pad in between their calls with things that would spur questions. So an article or something like that.
That's why I've always wanted to do one, because I actually think the part I would enjoy about a call-in show, besides the fact that I would love to talk to people, is I would enjoy the spontaneity, sort of the improvness of filling time while we waited for the next call and landing on the topic that gets people's interest going, the jolt you get when the phone lines start ringing up because you landed on a good topic.
Yeah.
Plus, that seems like the fun part.
Plus, it would push the show in the more community-oriented direction that it's always been going in.
But because because it's such a short time and it's this Tuesday, if you email those people back and said, even if you can't make it live, call this number live and you'll get on air. But if you can't call at any time and leave your voicemail. And we could put that number out in last and tell people that, and you could actually probably get a few calls, then that could be a really, if nothing else, a real cool concept episode of Unplugged, a one-off.
Yeah, I would do that. And then if that held water, then maybe look at spinning that off.
All right, let's plan on doing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's do it. That's cool.
Done.
And that's how shows are born on JP.
Meeting adjourned. Rikai's got a new PC build. It's coming along. It's not done yet. Of course, it's piece by piece as the budget allows, but the case is here. Motherboard is here. CPU?
Yep.
But the drive situation, I'm not clear on what the drive situation and if there's an allowance for the Linux.
So I'm getting a 512 gigabyte M.2 that's going to run the Windows side of things. And Noah has decided that he's going to donate me an SSD for Linux, because he insists that if he's going to help with this, that he has Linux involved.
I think my exact phraseology was, if you want me to come out and pretend to be excited about your computer, it has to have Linux on it. And then I think I wound that down to, well, if it's important to you as a person, then it's important to me as a person because we're friends.
Are you going to record this build? Is that the plan?
Yeah, I think so.
Are you concerned it might be like a 2-year-old Crucial SSD, though?
No, Noah usually has good
Samsung drives.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
He's he pretends to be dumb with tech, but he's actually a really smart guy.
Or he'll at least ask you, "Hey, Rikai, what's a good SSD to get?"
No. There are two drives I buy. The first is the Samsung 840 or 850 Pro series. I don't buy the Evo. I don't care what everyone else in the tech industry says. There is a difference between the Evo and the Pro. And if you can't tell the difference from the Evo and the Pro, then that's why I'm not taking SSD advice from you. There is a difference, and that's why it does justify the price difference. The only other drive that I think there's Intel, obviously, is great competition, but I think that their price leverages them out of the competition a little bit, because for the same price, you can get the Samsung, which is faster. And I've never, ever, 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 ever had a Samsung drive fail.
Same.
And the second one that I think warrants a real look, and it wasn't even one that I sought after. It's just one that I kept being handed from in various ways and kept finding myself stumbling into, and that's SanDisk. And SanDisk, the SanDisk Extreme, they happen to stock them at Best Buy, which means when I need an SSD and I need it fast, I would go over there and get one. And I just happened to notice that they feel really responsive and that they are incredibly cost effective and that they are... that I've not had one fail. And so I kind of took a step back and I'm like, maybe I should look into this a little bit more. And after I researched it, I found that there's a bunch of people that have the same experience. It's kind of like the hidden gem. So if you're looking for a really budget friendly SSD that has incredible performance, SanDisk. If you want a no compromise, I will spend whatever it takes, but I need the best of the best, Samsung.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm going to put Linux on this SSD, I guess. And so I already plan to use Linux for a development environment, but I was wondering if you guys had any ideas what else I should do with it, since you're the Linux gurus.
I would argue, to start with, I would look at using it as just a day-to-day driver, when you go to check your email, when you go to browse the internet, when you go to watch YouTube, when you go to, you know, any of those things, I would do those things on Linux. And I think what you'll find is you start to become invested in the operating system. You start to get, like, when you sit down at a computer, you immediately hit this key combination, or your mouse immediately goes to this area of the screen to access this particular context menu or whatever. You start to become attached almost to the computer where...
Yeah, but you're making the case for continuing to use Windows.
No, I'm not. Not at all. Not at all. The problem with continuing to use Windows is right now you're invested in that operating system, right? But you're finding limitations. You can't do some of your development work on it. And also, and more importantly, in my opinion, is it's not as ubiquitous as Linux is. And the best example of that, and I bring it up because Chris and I can go back and forth about this, is we went to System 76 to go do a show, literally did not plan or bring almost anything with us. We brought, you know, some video gear, but as far as the computer part of it, we didn't even think about it. We just figured we'll figure something out when we got there. And we just grabbed a random computer, and it was not a System 76 machine. It was a personal machine of one of the guys that worked there. And within 45 minutes had that thing transformed into a dedicated OBS rig. And
there's two things that really make Linux great for your workflow and getting set back up. And that is repositories. That just not having to go to a website and download a file, wait for it to download, then go to your downloads directory, double-click that file, then accept the UAC prompt, then accept the EULA, and then run through the wizard, and then wait for it to do its thing, and then possibly restart. Just to avoid all of that anytime you want any software that actually matters is so nice, so quick. But then the frickin' Linux kernel, man... The way the driver model works on Linux is so much more convenient and superior when you're trying to get a system spun up and working than it is under Windows. And it is so enjoyable to be able to take a hard drive out of a machine and plug it into another machine and have almost 99% guarantee. There's going to maybe be some network issues, but almost just everything's going to work. It works super solid when you just hook stuff up. Mm. You combine that ubiquity of hardware support with the software repositories, and you can get stuff. You can go from a totally blank system up and running in a super short amount of time. So that's really nice. And keeping things maintained is really nice from the repo standpoint. I guess I follow what you're saying in that analogy, but that only feels like that's only useful when you're setting up a system.
I disagree because, like I said, like where I was going with it was once you get invested in that particular operating system and that in the operating system becomes second nature, you don't have to worry about is that particular operating system available to me. If that operating system, for example, is Windows, you build the next computer, you're on the hook to buy another Windows license and you got to go through and install all of that stuff. And so if I'm going to take the time to get myself set up and learn all that stuff, I'm going to do it in Linux. And the nice thing is, and this is where I think it starts to take off just from setting it up, is there's more you can do with it. There's more playing and experimentation and things that I can customize and play with. I don't know of any other desktop
environment. More is subjective.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know of any other desktop environments for Windows other than Arrow.
Well, but more, you can do more with it unless that more is the latest video games that are released for Windows. You see what I'm saying?
Kind of, but if you get niche enough, I think then you can narrow it down and say Windows is better. But I think that, I mean, if we just looked at, there are plenty of games for Linux. It just happens to be that the ones that people want to talk about, and so then the ones that are quote unquote popular, just, you know, happen to not be.
20% of the games that are available on Windows.
No.
The games that are popular.
No, that's not true. That's not true. 20% of the games that are released for Windows, you mean to say. We're not, I mean, if you look, if you go into the Ubuntu App Store, there are thousands of games that you can play on Linux.
Yeah, thousands of games that nobody plays.
So, right, that's what I said. Oh, hold on. We got to keep our, okay. By technicality and in numbers, Noah, you may be right, but we have to shift. You have to shift your lens to Rikai here, who is, I would say, I don't know, he is a video game connoisseur. He is right. I mean, he has very high standards, high taste for video games. He will not play games if they don't meet a certain criteria for him.
Well, not only that, but I also want to play games that people are interested in, and people are interested in games that just aren't available for Linux.
Mm-hmm. That's the wrong. I think you're down the wrong path, Farika. I think I have a better path.
Okay.
I think I have the whole 360 approach here. You ready, Rikai? Here's what it is. When a game comes along that is available on Linux and Windows that you are currently into, like, so this just happened with Starbound, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could use that as a window, like a 2 or 3 week, however long you just totally get in on this game, you could use that as a quote unquote week challenge or a 2 week challenge to use Linux as your primary desktop for everything. Because if the main game you want to play is running on Linux at that point, and Chrome is available and Telegram and all your other tools are available under Linux desktop for the most part, you'd pretty much be set up for success. You wouldn't be rebooting at the end of the day to go play your video game because it would be working on your desktop. So Starbound's kind of come and gone perhaps for you, but there may be other games down the road that are available on Linux that then you could use that as an opportunity to take like a Linux desktop challenge. So you could kind of take care of the desktop and nurture it and get the dev environment set up with in mind that when the right game comes along, that will be your window of opportunity, because I feel like that gives you the best chance for success.
Yeah, I guess so. I kind of feel like I sent you guys down the wrong mental path.
Who,
with this
us?
Question.
Never.
like, I'm already planning to use Linux as my daily driver.
Oh,
I work
good.
At JB.
What?
What I was originally asking is not convince me to use Linux, but what on Linux do you think I should use that would make me feel excited about Linux?
Things that you would be very excited about on Linux. I mean, for me, it's I have this bad habit of finding things and then coming up with reasons why I can't live without them. So, for example,
Tiling window managers.
Huh?
Tiling window managers.
That's a little different. That literally, well, yeah, I guess that it, that actually, no, you know what? You're right. That is exactly how that started. That is exactly how that started. I looked at it and I said, this is stupid. I would never use this. Wait a minute. If I did X, oh, that would solve it. And then, oh my gosh. Yeah. I can't live without it. You're right. And so what I find the most fun about, if I'm looking for something to play with is I look for, really, it's not, I hate to say this, it's really not, has nothing to do with desktop Linux, but it's all the different little kind of servers that I can set up that do something. So I'm experimenting with a new software, and I don't want to say what it is because I think I want to make a segment out of it for last, but it's a software that can compete with Salesforce. And so one of the things that we're trying to do for 2017 at AltaSpeed is concentrate more on picking up new clients. We have gotten to the point where I think we are serving our clients as best as we're ever going to be able to. And so now I want to expand out and pick up more, get into different industries, stuff like that.
Wow, man. So, I'd love to talk about more of that in a future episode.
Yeah. Well, and so, but part of that is I need software to coordinate all of those people, because that's not I'm not doing that. That's somebody else. Noah does not do that. Somebody else does that. And so, but I need to be able to look on a day and say, is this making us money? Is it worth spending XYZ to get so-and-so to do this? And so I have software set up to do that. Well, first, that was fun, setting that software up, getting that server set up, getting the account set up, having that tie in with our ticketing system so that when a ticket is created, we can track how many tickets are tied to a specific sales rep and stuff like that kind of thing. That is fun to me. But that again is me finding something and saying, how could I make this work? And how could I solve a problem? And I find a solution first, and then I find a problem that it solves. Because I was aware of the software before I had this idea.
I think I have what's going to work for you, Rika. I got the recipe.
Okay.
I would keep in mind what your next real big challenge is you're going to spend a while working out your workflow, your production process for the content you'll be creating. And, you know, you've already got a good process now, but of course it's going to keep evolving. And I would whenever it seems reasonable to you, I would look at when something comes up that you want to be able to do in your production process, I would look at how Linux might be the solution, or how doing something with FFmpeg might work. So then you do it on the Linux side, or doing this with, you know, recording this screen session in OBS is how I'm going to capture this, and I could just do that under Linux. So just look for spots where you can plug your Linux system into the production process, and that, I think, will send you down the path of like learning tools to just do crazy shit with huge amounts of storage. Like, maybe you'd end up like that process of like, oh, I'm going to use OBS to capture this on the Linux desktop. 6 months later might be you figuring out how to use Bcache FS across a bunch of little cheap SSD drives to get a crazy fast scratch disk or something. Yeah. Like, you could just, you never know where it's going to branch.
I have a feeling that what's going to end up happening with my Linux box is I'm going to end up beta testing ideas that are going to get rolled out into JB.
I think so. I think that's very possible. Plus, what I like about it is the feedback loop that you and I will probably have, where we'll sort of keep trying things, of course, and Noah too. Mm-hmm. We're all sort of going to be feeding into that shared discovery process, which will sort of accelerate it.
Like something I I haven't really thought about too deeply, but I want to try is a way that JB, rather than writing to the same system that you're recording on, being able to like write directly to a network drive without any any issues.
Or what about the station you're going to be editing at?
What
about if the editing computer, say the storage is managed such on the editing computer that there was always enough free space for like the week's shows, and the main wire recording machine, the end mezzanine file was recorded and saved directly to the hard drive that the editing machine's attached to.
Well, I was thinking more along the lines of we have a central data storage source where you record to, and I also edit from without having to copy at all.
Yeah, the only thing I like about that is then we have a central spot for stuff that's done out in the field that could sync to it.
Yeah.
And so if I'm out at like this event on Tuesday, I could be at the event and I could be saving stuff to a folder that syncs to there too, and you'd have those assets.
Yeah, and we set up a series of scripts that watch folders and change formats, make it automatically available to be able to edit without having to touch anything.
Mm, that would be nice. And then you could grow from there, because then if you had a machine that was standing by with some CPU power later on, you could have it watch, say, an intake folder where people could drop things like GoPro footage or the footage from Noah's camera at an event, and you could have a back-end script that converts it to the mezzanine format.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. Yeah, that would be really neat to experiment with. And I like the idea of streamlining. For some reason, it feels like it's a good idea to streamline a process, to come up with a process that doesn't necessarily require JB1 to be a physical presence. And it's just sort of a feeling I have, like that's the right direction to go in.
Hey, I got an idea. Rikai, take your headphones off for a second. Here's what we'll do. In the middle of the night. In the middle of the night.
He still got them on.
In the middle of the night, here's what we're going to do.
Can't hear anymore now.
We're going to go into his room, and while he sleeps, while he slumbers, and this could be a little difficult because his hours of sleep, they vary from day to day, but I think I have a rough schedule down, and we can sneak his Windows drive out and replace it with a Linux-only SSD, and then we'll just theme a dual-booted version of Linux as Windows.
Yeah.
So it'll look
he'd never
like
notice.
So he'll feel
he runs
right
most
home.
His applications full screen anyways. He'd never notice.
Yeah.
You know what that would lead to, though, is a battle between you two to see who could outstay awake the other. And I honestly would love to witness that, because both of you are some sort of weirdos that could probably go. How many days do you think you'd go without sleep, Rikai?
I've gone something like 5 days with no sleep before.
Ooh, Jesus,
I think
dude.
I think that tops me. I think the longest I've ever gone is four.
I don't know if he could do
four.
It now, though. He probably has to be in like his no sleep prime or something. What do you think you
no,
could
I
do?
I could do it now.
What, Rikai?
I could totally outdo Noah with no sleep.
Oh, I wonder.
I don't know if I'd take him up on that challenge, because I 4 days and I start to get like super loopy. Like to the point that I can't even make coherent thoughts and stuff.
I mean, I have seen Rikai go a while without sleep, so I feel like maybe Noah is more practiced at is intentionally not sleeping for a period of time. And so I feel like if you guys were to actually have a competition, the sprinter may win, because Noah is more practiced at probably a 48-hour intentional no sleep window. Mm-hmm. When Rikai does it, it's probably not as practiced, I would think. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, he might beat you. Like, if you are more up to speed on doing it, you could probably get him overall in the long. You could probably go 5 days. Yeah. But I think you'd have to build up to it for a few events before you could do the five-day stretch.
Chris, I'm like an Olympic-trained swimmer, where back when I was younger, I used to just not sleep for 5 days because I wanted to do stuff.
Wow.
And then I'd sleep for like 18 hours and then go for another 5 days.
Wow. Wow. Okay, but the only reason why this will never be a competition is because by no means do we ever want to do that to either one of your health. But I would be.
What are you talking about? We're going
to
do this next Linux.
I think what he means to say is by no means are we ever going to do this, because I can't stand to have my editor on a 5 day sleep deprivation and my co-host with a 4 day sleep deprivation. No matter who wins,
what are you
Chris
talking
loses.
About? That's when we make the best content, Noah.
I don't know about that, dude. I've rewatched some of the videos you and I filmed at 3 a.m. I don't know if I would call that our best content.
Well, I don't know. People love it.
There's some that we've never released that is the best stuff, legitimately the best stuff. We should, you know what we should do is the stuff that you forbid me from releasing, we should put in a vault, because I bet like Noah from 2 years from now will look back at it and go, oh, yeah, that's
hilarious.
Well, yeah, I'll give you this. I'll tell you why there might be a ever so slightly validity to that idea is because I haven't deleted it. So all the stuff that I forbid you from releasing, I still have. I never delete any of that. I still keep it. So I mean,
we should make, at least a there's small a milestone
part
on
of
Patreon.
Me, a very small part of me must be okay with it.
There's a yeah, exactly.
If we get to X number of dollars, we're gonna release Noah's embarrassing stuff.
Yeah, that means that means you're an exhibitionist at heart.
So here's the only. I think here's what I'm afraid of is if we ever get to a point, and I'm not even promising we're gonna get to that point, but if we ever got to a promise where I get all this stuff where I'm like, oh, let's go release this stuff. If we ever got to that point and then it went badly, even one time, then what would happen
You'd
is not
ruined.
Only would I not want to do it in the future, is I wouldn't even record that stuff to begin with. Like, like right now, it's one of those things where I'm like, I'll record it, and I'm like, I'll wake up in the morning and see if this was a good idea or a bad idea.
But so, like, if, and we if still get to share with each other, face, at least.
So what you're saying is that we need to invest in spy cameras for JB.
I'm just saying, if I was a listener of the Linux Action Show and I knew there was unreleased footage of you guys doing PC builds at 3 a.m, I would really want to see that.
Well, it sounds like that's coming.
Well, I feel like we've drifted way off topic.
Yeah, we have.
Thank you.